Welcome to the Full of Money audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 7:25 Irish Summer Time. Today is May 23rd, and of course, it being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Well, before we get started on some of those longer-term themes, let's have a look at what has moved the markets this week. Chief on the headlines has been oil's rampant move. It hit a high above $135 earlier this week and is currently just at 132 even. So this has been really an impressive move. What we can see from the oil chart is that it is a remarkably consistent trend, but some of those consistency characteristics are starting to change right now. We do have a step sequence uptrend. The steps are one above another, and the reactions have been relatively similar sized. However, those reactions are now starting to be shorter in terms of time and narrower in terms of their amplitude, which means that this trend is speeding up and moving into an accelerating phase. Oil has pulled back from the high that we saw earlier this week and fell more than a dollar yesterday, and it's up just over a dollar in here today. But what we are seeing is that there's no evidence of a downward dynamic. This trend is still very much in motion and remains consistent, and although it's picking up pace, we don't have a clear signal yet that it has hit a high of significance, which means that we can continue to give the upside the benefit of the doubt. Of course, rising oil prices and obviously the ensuing rise in the distillate prices is a headwind for stock markets, and this was also a week in which we saw a number of stock markets encountering resistance, and we've seen the Wall Street indices down in excess of 1% the last 3 days in a row. So these downward dynamics have capped the advance in the short term. It does look like this is going to be a lengthy convalescence for a number of equity markets, following those markets having found support in January and retesting that support in March with a number of failed downside breaks. So there's a negative leash effect out there with Wall Street pulling backwards, and we saw that just about every index in Europe was down in excess of 1%, and one or two in excess of 2% today. And that has been something that we've seen pretty much for the last 3 days in the week, that we're getting a little bit of a negative leash effect from Wall Street pulling back quite sharply. Treasury markets remain in a gradual topping out phase. We have the 30-year just at 116.19 as I speak, but that has had downward dynamics this week also. In something that is not exactly the same as the equity markets, bond markets hit a climactic high in January and never really moved back towards that high. They encountered resistance well below the highs in March, and this does look to be a gradual topping out process. When we look at those longer term charts of the government bond yields, particularly the 10-year, because that's got the most history, we can see that it bottomed in 2003 and rallied reasonably well, but the fallout from the credit crisis has lengthened this cycle in the bond markets, and it looks like this base formation in government bond yields will take longer to be completed. But the fact is that just recently we have seen government bond yields finding support above their 2003 lows, and while the topping out process for bond prices, or the bottoming out for yields, could be quite lengthy, as long as we have that progression of rising lows within the base, that is very much indicative of a rising threat to our inflation, and it does look like a period where we're going to get gradually higher interest rates and gradually higher government bond yields, as the threat of inflation is taken more seriously as time goes by. This was also a week in which we saw precious metals rebounding really quite well. Platinum is back up to 2,171, so testing the highs just above 2,200, if my memory serves me correctly. Silver has also rallied reasonably well and is testing those February highs, but is still well below the speculative highs that we saw earlier this year. Actually, February highs may not be correct, but it's certainly towards the upper side of its range. And gold was up almost $20 at one point this week, and is up four today, back above $900, well above $900, $925. But we have certainly started to see that gold is finding support. Platinum is leading on the upside. If, of course, we see oil continuing to progress to higher ground, and with the inflationary ramifications of that move, that will also be supportive of the precious metals. But at the moment, what we can say with a reasonably high degree of confidence is that precious metals have found support following this rather large reaction we saw in March. And while the length of time it will take them to regain their highs and sustain moves above those highs is indeterminate, there is a very good chance that the support that they have found recently marks the low for this reaction. So that is certainly of importance. The dollar also, which had been rallying quite well over the last couple of weeks, ran into some trouble this week, and we see the euro has actually pulled up back right back up to 157.73, so almost 158 to the dollar. The dollar index is at just below 72. So we're starting to see a little bit of dollar weakness creeping in also this week. Now, that's pretty much where we are with most markets. I suppose I should also mention the agricultural commodities, which have been reasonably firm over the last few days, but still don't really look like anything other than this is a medium-term correction, and don't look like they're about to regain their highs anytime soon. Looking at the longer-term themes, well, we see that in the equity markets. Equity markets are certainly under pressure in here at present from the price of crude and from inflationary pressures generally, and the credit crisis remains a background worry. When we look at the VIX index, we see that volatility was remarkably low in the early part of this decade, but the upward break that we saw last year is pretty much marking the end of the Goldilocks phase, where everything was just right, where we had low inflation, stable growth. And it does look like we are moving into a more volatile period of time, where the majority of indices will be just that bit more volatile, and we're going to be in for a bit more whippy trading. There is a tendency in this environment to take your profits early because that is probably the easiest way to make money here. But provided we see that markets can hold on to those higher lows, then a buy and hold strategy will generally develop and overtake the strategy of taking profits quickly. That's probably a bit early to call that one right now, but what we certainly see is that resources markets are leading on the upside. And that is probably something that we can count on for quite a bit of time to come. Because they're leading on the upside, they're going to be very important to keep an eye on, because if they start breaking down aggressively, that would be a lead indicator for other stock markets. What we've seen recently is that a number of markets have found support in January and in March, but when you look over the longer term, particularly at the European indices or on Wall Street, the five-year uptrend has been broken. And while the reactions have been relatively shallow, in the order of 10 or 15% in a number of markets, what we can expect is that for the convalescence to be reasonably lengthy. One of the reasons for this, of course, is that while the trend was remarkably consistent and the trend was in motion and reactions were relatively shallow and were superseded really quite quickly, that has certainly not been the case on this occasion. The reaction has been larger. The fundamental background and fear in stalking the market has been considerably larger. And there have been a lot more people have lost money in this particular reaction. and it will take time for confidence to return. The banking shares remain one of the weaker sectors out there, and banks' business model, the model that they've used to make money easily, is essentially broken, and it's going to take time for them to come up with something new. It does mean that the convalescence for the banking sector is going to take considerably longer, probably, than the wider indices. And those indices that have a greater weighting in resources rather than finance will probably be the better performers. And that has certainly been true recently. Markets that have broken upwards to new highs since the reaction back in October have been, and I'm just listing them on my fingers as they come to mind, we had South Africa, Brazil, Russia, Canada, Norway. And the one thing that all of those markets have in common is that they're resources exporters. The markets that have been some of the worst performers have been remarkably heavily weighted by finance. So we've had Ireland, Switzerland in Europe, and Australia took a very big hit, although considerably later than other indices because it has a very high weighting in financials. Of course, it should also be mentioned that with Australia, the Australian Resources Index, the AS48, is also pushing upwards to new high ground and can be taken in conjunction with all those other resources markets. So that is certainly worthy of notice. But the move upwards in commodity prices is long-term inflationary. And of course, inflation is not just coming from the push upwards in commodity prices, but inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon, and M3 is growing at multiples of GDP growth in the vast majority of countries. The US, which doesn't publish M3 anymore, is certainly putting money into the system at an accelerating rate. Of course, this isn't the first time this has happened, and it's been happening on a number of occasions over the last decade and longer. We had the Asian financial crisis and long-term capital management and the Russian debt default. We had Y2K, 9/11, and just about any time where central banks have been afraid of deflationary fears, they have erred on the side of inflation and they've printed money at an accelerating rate. The very fact that we don't have runaway trends in the major cross currencies or the major reserve currencies of the world is an indication that we are in a competitive devaluation type environment. For every dollar that is created in the US, there is a counterpart for that dollar created in the central banks of other countries around the world. Because if that wasn't the case, the dollar would be devalued to a meaningless currency. And since that has not occurred, we can just draw the very simple conclusion that all central banks are in the same game, regardless of whether they play to the inflationary media or play the inflationary card to the media that they are being vigilant or not. The fact is that they are all growing their M3 considerably in excess of GDP growth. And that is devaluing currencies and is making them worthless over the longer term. And investors are slowly starting to come to this realization. We are increasingly starting to see people talking about gold being in a secular bull market. And even though we are in the middle of a correction in here at the moment, and people are much more likely to realize that fact rather than to call for the end of the bull market and to continue to say that this has just been a cyclical move. So the realization that inflation is a problem and that governments are understating inflationary pressures and are devaluing currencies is slowly starting to come to the realization of investors, where they are now starting to turn towards hard assets. The impact that index funds are having on the commodity sector generally is debatable, but what we can certainly see a trend towards is that investors are increasingly interested in commodities as an asset class, and that is something that is probably not going to change anytime soon. The agricultural commodities have hit the headlines recently because they've had accelerated uptrends, which for the most part ended in March, although the media have been very slow to catch on to that process, and politicians even slower. But because this has entered the public arena, there is likely to be political interference, which could have an impact on the market. So those who are highly leveraged or very long in this sector, I think, have good choice or good notice to be wary of this market. Personally, I'm not touching the soft commodities in here right now. While I think there is certainly an argument to be made for opening small positions in precious metals, and I incidentally haven't done that yet either, but I'm waiting for a pullback, trying to do what I say rather than what I've done in the past, and I would prefer to buy on a pullback. So I'm attempting to wait for that to happen. But looking at the commodity space in general, it is being driven to a large extent by, well, on the industrial side, by the emergence of more than 3 billion people as consumers in the global economy. That's not something that's going to change anytime soon. And as development in countries which are progressing in terms of GDP growth and governance, as well as freedom of the press and general freedoms of the individual, as people move into higher income brackets, they already aspire to the standard of living that we enjoy in the West, or at least are indeed take for granted in the West. And they are going to consume greater quantities of all commodities per capita going forward. Of course, there are a lot more of them it just coming into the consumer world than there are in it already. So that sets the stage for increased demand for every sort of commodity going forward. Of course, it's not going to be linear, and commodities which are volatile by their very nature will go through sizable corrections. But for the most part, we can certainly say that they are in secular bull markets, and we can anticipate that in the coming decade we will see significantly higher prices for the vast majority of them. The dearth of supply is a factor of the generational long bear market we went through for the vast majority of commodities. When the people in an industry who know it best and love it least because they've been disappointed the most, we are being set up for a big bull run. There were some fantastic examples brought to light at the recent chart seminar. There was one delegate whose family is in the shipping business, and they sold their ship on the first big rally in the Baltic freight rates back in the early 2000s because they'd been conditioned throughout the entire bear market that it was a cyclical industry and that this was probably the best opportunity they were going to have to dispense with their ship. We also had a delegate from Cairns in Australia who told us about when he was working in the mining industry, and it was only 3 or 4 years ago that he was at a meeting where people were talking about cutting costs by 40% in order to keep the mine open. Well, we just don't get those kind of meetings anymore. The meetings today are much more about how they can hire enough of people with the right skills to expand the mine, where they can get the money to increase the infrastructure, to improve the ability to export so that they can gain a bigger market share and access this market more readily. It is going to be a long time before we get back into that type of bear market. And it was a very long time before mining was a sexy industry. Anyone who was really interested in making money went into banking in the last 10 years and technology the 10 years before that. Whereas I would fully anticipate that 10 years from now, there will be a lot more people studying geology than there are today because it will become a much more sexy industry to work in. But when you have so many people entering the world as consumers, that makes the market for consumable goods and raw commodities extremely growth oriented. And markets such as India and China, which we have often referred to as the king and queen of emerging markets, are set to, their stock markets should perform remarkably well over the coming decades as more money from domestic investors funnels into those domestic markets. Brazil is also hitting the headlines recently because it is so well endowed with resources. And of course, that large oil find that was made off the coast recently is also enjoying some speculative inflow because it is anticipated that Brazil is going to become a major oil exporter. But Brazil is also benefiting enormously from growth in Asia, and that is certainly something that's not going to change anytime soon. Of course, all of these people competing for scarce resources, and particularly when those are natural resources that can't be replenished quickly, well, then the price for those goes up and inflationary pressures increase. I've already talked about the competitive devaluation by central banks, and in this type of environment, particularly when we have the competitive environment of globalization, there is no country wants a strong currency, or at least there is no country. Put it another way, most countries want a weak currencies, and some countries want a weak currency more than others. The dollar at the moment is congenitally weak, and I can't think of a really good reason why it should rally significantly. We could be in a gradual bottoming out process for the dollar, and it has been in a downtrend for much of the last 3 years. But the dollar is a very big currency, and it is in just about every asset class. And when we look at that long-term chart of the dollar index, we see that it doesn't top out in weeks or months. It takes years for the dollar to bottom out or to top out. That has been the case in all of the major trend reversals. So we can anticipate plenty of opportunity for people to change their minds and to start to become dollar bullish once more, but it could take a number of years. This will also give us ample opportunity to be in and out of precious metals, because when the dollar is in a weakening phase, that is certainly supportive of most commodities and precious metals particularly. Looking at that long-term yield chart I posted in the interesting charts today, you'll see that we have ended a period of disinflation, and interest rates are historically really quite low. We are most likely in at the beginning of a new inflationary cycle. Now, the bottoming out process for yields is likely to take longer just because of this credit crisis and the massive infusions of liquidity that we've seen, and the opening of the discount window to brokerages for the first time. And the banks are being bailed out by the yield curve. That means that interest rates are being kept low and the bond market is being supported, which means that there is a rather large interest rate spread. The chances are that it is going to take quite a long time for the government bond price to top out. Probably a country that is going to point the direction in which way government bond prices are going to perform is Australia. If you pull up the 10-year government bond price and you look at it over the last 20 years, it looks like a very long developing top formation. It does look like an accident waiting to happen, and it looks like inflation is going to become a problem in Australia just by inference from the way government bond prices there are reacting at present. How Australia deals with that problem is likely to be a lead indicator for what we can see happening in other countries as inflation becomes a problem over the medium to longer term. And of course, by medium to longer term, I'm talking more years to decades rather than weeks to months. The one area in the world where we're seeing strengthening currencies is in Asia. We've seen recently that a number of Asian currencies have become considerably weaker and really quite quickly, and the Asian dollar index has had a larger reaction than we've seen over the last few years. That probably indicates that we are in a period of time where the appreciation of a number of Asian currencies is going to pause. We've seen the rupee weakening quite significantly recently. I think that we are probably close to a short-term bottom for the rupee, but that Generally, that currency bottomed out in 2002, and we're on a new upward trajectory for the rupee. And significant sell-offs are going to be buying opportunities, I think, for a significant period of time to come. The Korean won has also weakened considerably. Interestingly, the Singapore dollar has been a tower of strength. They are serious about becoming the Switzerland of Asia, and they're attracting considerable inflows in terms of private banking revenue. But right across the region, we are seeing currency strengthen, and the leader in this regard has been the Chinese yuan. Of course, they also have their own inflationary pressures, and they're using just about every tool they have at their disposal to try and keep inflation under control. One of those tools will be to allow the yuan to appreciate. And of course, they're under considerable political pressure to allow that to happen as well. So while there is a competitive devaluation going on in the currencies of the world, some currencies will be stronger than others, and predominantly in the Asian region. And of course, because Asia is also the leader in terms of GDP growth right around the world, it has the demographics and the educated population rapidly integrating themselves into the global consumer economy. The chances are that it is going to attract considerable inflows of cash in terms of investment over the medium to longer term, which should certainly help to promote the stock markets of that region. When we talk about where the bubbles are going to occur, there is every chance that we're going to see a bubble in commodities over the next decade, and that will probably happen concurrently with a bubble in emerging markets, because these are seen as where the real action is occurring, and where we have masses of new people entering the global economy, and with governments focusing on developing the infrastructure that is needed to cater for such massive young populations who are currently in need of education, but 10 years from now will vitally be in need of jobs, and the infrastructure will simply have to be in place to cater for them, or you are going to face some quite significant civil unrest, I predict. But with that rather gloomy thought, I will leave you for the evening. But thank you very much for your time, and have a great weekend.